Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about accidental quantum physics. In this podcast series, I'm going to chip away at what it is, what is quantum physics, what it's like to be a quantum physicist, and it's entitled Accidental because there's a series of accidents or things which I haven't planned, I haven't decided, which has led me there, and you might be reading it accidentally as well. So in this, I've sort of learnt a little bit. I went to a podcast conference and realised that you've got to have podcasts with the beginning and end. And so the beginning of this is this sort of the accidental framework of what these podcasts are and how they're not very good, and also how I accidentally became a quantum physicist. And then I'll do other episodes on just the basics of the really raw basics of quantum physics, and then the historical intrigue. And it's more than a, it's sort of like an awesome Cold War spy novel, but just much more chilling. You know, I think people have actually died because they haven't understood quantum physics. That's as serious as it gets. But in this episode, I'm going to cover the accidental quantum physicist, how I accidentally fell into quantum physics, and how I'm accidentally fell into podcasting, and how you unfortunately are accidentally listening to these podcasts. So let's go off a little bit and let's talk about how you accidentally listen to a podcast. So these podcasts are actually not technically podcasts in the purest form. They're more voice memos, because what happens is that I think about what I'm going to say it, shove it in my computer, and it's like a voice memo to the world. So for the purists, it's not really a podcast. It's voice memoing. There you go. Now, of course, what I have had to do is slowly, rather than do post-production and things like that, slowly get better and better microphones. I have to do that. And slowly chew my way through better and better equipment. And then this sort of will explain sort of the rationale behind some of it. So I started off, what did I do? It sort of came out the way that I was producing YouTubes, and the sound quality from my microphones and computer was just awful. And I was speaking with someone called Andrew Smith. I've really got to think of the name of the software. This is fantastic software where it sort of merges vocal stuff and texting and visual stuff. It merges it all together to make an explanation. I've really forgotten whether it's called Blitz, Blots, something like that. I'll have to go back. And there you go. You might be picking up. I may be having a few memory problems there. But I can't remember this fantastic stuff. But that got me on to producing sound bits for YouTubes, putting it into mobile phones. And I used to do that and sort of note the editing time for that. And so you've got a clue, there's a few memory problems there. And I began doing podcasts into my mobile phone. And this is, you know, a bit, I didn't have any equipment. I had an old mobile phone, but I was told that mobile phone technology is just the bee's knees. It's very hard to get above that. And so I began doing that. And another clue is that I had to produce a lot of these voice recordings. The audience and you are not really that important. The more important thing is that I get to cognitively do things. And the sort of key that I was directed to is to walk and speak, do something and speak at the same time, to cognitively go there. So you've got a clue that there's memory stuff and that I'm cognitively doing it. Now, the second thing is that I'm sort of also from a production background. So I have so much, let's reveal, it's sort of rehab to do. And it's off this way, and I'm in a sort of specialist case in that I can sort of go with the professionals and work with them as much as I can. But the idea is to get as much podcasting, the actual physical practice of speaking, going as quickly as possible per day. And so time I spend waiting for my computer to go and shape and noise remove when indeed it's, you know, if I spend, you know, a factor of three times more than I make doing it, and people would spend, I would kid you not, 100, even 1,000 times per minute. So every minute of podcast, a beautiful crafted podcast, they'll spend a long time doing it. Now, I could do that, but if no one's going to listen to my podcast in the first place, I've got mistakes and other things doing, it's sort of like, I don't know, it's sort of like putting on your shoes, your best shoes, you know, when your hips have been destroyed, and you've got artificial hips or whatever it is, you've been paralyzed and back, and you just get your slippers on and get moving on the stuff. So in this case, it was more, okay, well, I think I can get it down to a one-to-one ratio, and then obviously less and less. The more I can move out, the greater hit I can go, and as I practice more and more, it'll take off. But it won't take off if I spend too long producing. So if you can see, the amount of hours I have to do has to be high and quick and hard, and then I can start to improve. And then once I start to improve, it sort of snowballs, gets on top of each other and going. So what happened? So there's a bit of background here. Let's tick it off. Memory problems, trying to do rehab, a bit of production nerd, robotic scientist. So I just basically treat it as a robot production problem, and built these robot controls for emails, podcasting, things structuring, data serving, the whole palaver. So what happens is that now you plug in your device, it senses it and publishes it. End of the story. And it can do several a day as it pushes myself ahead. And that wasn't easy. And of course, that gave me some material to podcast on. I could do a podcast on my Podomation, the automation that I'm using for podcasting. And then, of course, once I've got that, I can then add high maths to it and restructure it such that my podcast can be, you know, once I've got it up to that level, and it's not aiming to be high, I can actually go to another point in podcast space outside the main podcasting idea. And I will do a podcast on traditional podcasting versus this rapid assault podcasting. And look, there's lots of examples of this type of stuff. I don't want to say big note anything. I'm not a fantasist, but there's sort of rapid response troops, which at a moment's notice can be lopped in and causing havoc within an hour. This is a traditional parachute regiments that they fly over the top and you drop parachutes in, but then you've got to have saturation bombing and they only last so many hours in the field because they can't be resupplied, and they're sort of not designed to be resupplied. People have got a traditional view, these are the different things, and the entire idea of doing an activity is that you've got to build the resupply processes through the flow, through the entire flow through process. And I've got it up to a process that I've got, say, 100 listeners max, yeah, looking at this, and it's the process is up, and then I'll look, if at all necessary, I'll look at actually transfer across. I'm now 9 minutes in. I'm really now trying to say, oh, look, let's do short podcast. So that's the accidental stuff. So that's sort of how you're listening to it. And you've picked up a few clues that there's memory problems, cognitive things. Now, of course, my selection through, my immediate selection was that I needed a podcasting device, which were with my brain went off for a while and I fell asleep for a while, or, you know, I had I don't have this issue at the moment, but initially I had this problem of just reading and having to pause to get my brain together to keep on reading. So if you listen to me, raw podcasting was awful. So you can switch on these little dictaphoning devices to switch off when there's no noise. Now, of course, that doesn't work if you're in a noisy environment. It works in sort of very fixed environments, and so what it does is it just keeps on adding. Now, it doesn't sound a really good podcast at the end, but that sort of got me through. So it's all these getting through. So it used to be a 1-to-1 ratio, 1 to 0.5, 1 to really nothing now to produce it. Of course, that went up, and then the time and speed of podcasting went down, and then, of course, I decided in order to get fluency, I had to read books and magazines and stuff like that, and also to actually, when I put the read a magazine, to write a summary of it, and then perhaps if I was really eager, I would write a quiz. And again, I wouldn't. This is a quiz on the internet, a word search on the internet. So a quiz with symbols in it, so it would take words out of the symbol and make it a word search out of it. And the quiz itself, not code a quiz each time, just put in the basic template information and just read that across and then merge that all into an app. So I had things going all the way up to produce it, but sort of also the knowledge that things weren't going to go all that well. So there's that thing. Now, you may have a few suspicions as to why I'm here. So one of the things is life. Life goes well for a few people, and there's a group of people who life goes well, they get all the luck, and they've got the ego, and they say, look, I'm just great, and all that type of stuff. It has gone very well for me, but it's taken a few turns, and I'm the beneficiary of amazing technology, dedicated experts, and really experienced experts who can just put aside the noise of the day-to-day life, people not liking people, you know, the politics and stuff of work, and people not being nice to you and all that type of stuff, and go through and actually say, aha, well, you have the reason that you're suffocating is, and you're having trouble breathing, is not because people are being mean to you, not because you're mentally, your little valve inside your heart is Charles Darwin would say, bugger you, you should die, but we've got different, we're going to cut that faulty valve out and put in what turned out to be a little part from a V1 cruise missile from World War II, the German V1 buzz bomb valve at the top of the buzz bomb. It's the valve that made all the sound. So that's inside of me. It doesn't make the sound of a buzz bomb. It makes the sound of a little click. That's inside of me and will open you up. And there's a little bit of a story about by the time they opened me up, it was really rotten, and they had to do it twice going across. I won't go into that. But part of the collateral of that is that this old valve was sending up little clots to the brain, and I'm really sort of like the champion. I'm the Ricky Ponting of strokes, or Don Bradman of strokes, for 100 strokes up the top there. Something to be proud of, and I don't know, I'll do another podcast on what it's like to have a stroke and stuff like that, but it's sort of a bit silent, a bit spooky, and it's like, oh, I don't know, a jigsaw puzzle, and part of the jigsaw is missing all the time, or I just can't really describe it, but it requires a hell of a lot of work, because this is sort of like a gustation. You get to taste every type of condition. You've got every type of problem, bit of hearing, bit of sight, a little bit, enough to get a sense of what it's like, and then get over it if you try hard enough. And so that's there. So that's so you're the accidental listener. This is the accidental process, and the accident which started off is all these strokes and stuff like that. And in essence, it's the sort of thing that calms you down. And we'll look into. I won't describe what the glory of quantum physics is, but I'll sort of describe sort of how it happened. You know, how did I become a quantum physicist? How did I go into the quantum world? Well, it's, you know, I don't know. I just wanted to really say here. A lot of people think scientists are really skeptical. Or other people say scientists have an open mind, and, you know, like this. But other people are completely skeptical or have got completely open minds. But I really think the basis of a scientist is a combination of three factors which sort of work together. And that is skepticism. If you just accept everything that's going on, you just sit there, you're just like a couch potato, intellectual couch potato. Now, an open mind is sort of the other. So you've got to be a little bit sceptical. You've got to have an open mind to think, maybe there's an, oh, I don't like that. Maybe there's another way of doing it. You know, maybe that explanation of that really stupid person, that could be right, to have an open mind. And then you've got to be a bit naive. So if you look at these, you think sceptical, yuck, open mind, flaky, naive baby, but you really got to add those together, these properties together in the right combination, be a scientist. And I suppose you got to add on a bit of curiosity. It would be naive to say, perhaps I don't know it. You got to have a sense of your own naivety to learn in this process, to say, okay, well, this is not, you got to think I don't have the full amount of information. So that really was the sort of base personality engine at the start. You know, there's a bit of an environment there, you know, scientific family and stuff like that. And when you actually chat with scientists, they sort of go behind their white coat, sort of show and tell to the public the smile with the little twinkle on the teeth. You know, there's the smile and the glasses and the pens and the, you know, the opinions, whereas they're sort of just sort of philosopher dudes. And I think what there's another really important factor is that we have got this fantastic society here. No one has to hunt and gather food most of the day for their living or supervise another person who's doing another job. We've got this fantastic technological society where we've got an untold number of people who are communicating, thinking. It's like this golden age. That's my view anyway. I'm sure other people, yeah. And I suppose you need this sort of, you need skepticism, open-mindedness, naivety, optimism. I think optimism may really help. You've got all these ingredients coming together. So as a kid, grade six, I said, look, I really want to understand nuclear physics. And there's a couple of things which happened. And I got a book called How and Why books, these little books sold from the 60s, How I Nuclear Physics. And I just really championed it across. And in that, we had the first seeds of quantum mechanics. Coming across, you've got the neutrons and the protons, and the neutrons travel from one rare nucleus to the other and smash it open. And there was this sort of makes sense, but then it made sense, complete sense. But there was this thing, I just don't quite get that. That neutron is in that brick, and it moves out of that brick in through this whatever, you know, your moderator, your carbon. I really didn't understand any of that poison. Moves through that brick. So you've got a particle, and which is okay, neutron. So, and why is it, yeah, sort of like, okay, so it's this grape. How does it work? You know, doesn't that I just couldn't really completely figure it out, which is a sort of annoying thing. And then I'm sort of super enthusiastic about science, and give me all the classical science. So I had all this classical science. This is back, and you'll learn this later on, is that electrons aren't indeed smaller than neutrons and protons. But back in the day, I really believed the thing. I just love the picture of it. I love the fact that we're good, and we love that this process went here, and everyone thought it was great, and it made a big bomb, and there was radiation, and you could, you know, all the little bits and pieces, and the little bits of newspaper people. I sort of like, it's sort of like listening to pop music on the radio, but not being in a band. It's sort of like, you have a different appreciation. You rate, and I was channel surfing all the different things. And I had a belief, which is identical to the belief that you probably have. It's identical to the belief that we are now teaching kids at school. And unfortunately, that belief is a pseudo, a bogus belief, but I had it. I loved it. And I enjoyed it. And it had sort of so much symbol, it had sort of cultural value to it. I didn't see it as cultural value. I thought it was a real value at the time. And it turns out to be a load of rubbish. So unfortunately, what we teach our school, kids in school, are a load of rubbish. And this optimism, I don't know, you could add something else to the list. I came across this, I sort of held along onto this, the old idea, the pre-quantum mechanical idea, and was looking at started to get into the realm of quantum mechanics. I was looking at this gigantic 3 meter long water pistol, vacuum water pistol. The idea is that you'd make a water pistol so small, it's really crazy stuff, so small that the particles would have quantum interference at the other end. But this is with doing no quantum mechanics, it's just at the last moment saying, well, therefore we can add quantum mechanics for this situation. This is no understanding. Look, there's a pair of flies actually mating on my new scientist here. This is an aside. This is your natural thing. It's off. Okay, have your fun. Oh, they're flying off together. Oh, gee, they can actually mate in the air. There you go. I got into molecular physics, and in molecular physics, you're looking at things that there's just one sort of few little cracks in the armor. And what's that? This really horrible lecture. No, it was a great lecture, but horrible lecture in fourth year university. And this person said, oh, look, there's this lambda shift. The electron spends a little bit of its time inside the nucleus. And we know this is true, but don't tell anyone. It's a really famous effect, but it's out there. And I would ask a few people, and that they were just not quantum physicists. And, you know, it was, oh, okay, so the electron can go in, and then there was this, you know, this horrible rubbish I was taught, and I just couldn't quite get it. It was classical physics shoehorned into quantum mechanics. So I was still in the classical physics person, like majority of physicists who aren't quantum. Look, I must admit, I really myself have not met. Have I met any genuine quantum physicists? I must admit, I don't meet a lot of people, so that doesn't mean a lot. But I've met a lot of people who think they're quantum physicists, or put themselves on the newspapers as quantum physicists, and you read and you go, oh my god, they're not. But you don't worry, because, you know, no one's interested in you, and you're in your own little world trying to get things going. But, you know, oh my god, I'm in an age, sort of like, oh, I don't know, I hate to say it, like the first Christians, but when everyone else was pagan, you go, oh my god, how is this ever going to work? Okay. So, we're coming along, doing a few physics experiments, and I came across this phenomenon. This lamp. So, you know, like a desk lamp, but a different sort of desk lamp. This desk lamp has a vacuum tube, helium being pumped through it, and high frequency energy put into it. It's a real sort of 1930s evil laboratory sort of art. Well, it was, that's probably given away. It was an arc, but it was just lovingly caressed to be anything but an arc. And when it wasn't but an arc, it's producing these molecular lines, which produce UV light, which allowed us to pay more attention to what was happening at the other end. Okay. And this experiment happened, and you have really one knob on it, which is the helium pressure you put in. And if you put the helium pressure too high, it changes colour. It changes colour from a peach colour, a reddy colour, to a yellow colour. And that was it. I just said, I wanted to know about that. And so wanting to know about it is that it's sort of like one of those Scottish Shetlands police drama where they've got the candidates up on the blackboard, and it's like a investigative thriller. You're working through the candidates. It could be this, it's got to be that one. It's in the right place, the right time, and beside someone else, it could be that. And then there was a huge sort of forensic search disproving the other ones. So it was just like, it was really like nothing else. It was really like doing philosophy, coming across. And then I knew what this molecule, its fingerprint, so to speak, of this molecule. So, like, you can connect, I suppose the DNA of the molecule. Oh, yeah, I suppose the DNA of the molecule is one step away from it. So if you've got a crime scene and DNA, that's one step. It was a crime scene, a shape, and that shape had a DNA you could work. It was one step more complicated. But, now I'll come to the end of this really soon, but what happened is that I had the colour spectrum, and what used to happen is that I was told not to investigate this. So what you do, obviously, is you build it at night. You know, go in, build the lamp at night, take the measurement, and deconstruct it by the morning. Just every day. No evidence. I'm just perfectly normal here. Yeah, nothing to see here. Move on. Oh, like this. And so I got the spectrum of it, and you know, really began to look at it, and began to nut it out, and. As you go, you have this model, the old, what I call kindergarten model, that everyone works on, the non-quantum mechanical model, and the went to the supercomputers I didn't really know what I was doing. I was getting the quantum mechanical wave function, didn't quite understand what they were, and stuff like that, and there was an ANU physics tea room, the research school tea room. I still remember the sunlight streaming in on the little melamine tables, coffee tables there. I had the computer printouts. Finally, this is the old computer printouts. I don't know if you remember the old A2 sheets of paper with the holes inside, all of that. Numbers just churned out. You can imagine, you can almost, if you hear it, if you hold up the paper, you can actually almost hear the machines. I don't know if anyone can remember the sound of the old dot matrices saying, this computer is now producing something. It's sort of like the feeling that it's a machine that has to produce a machine like thing, like a machine gun coming out. And so all the numbers there, and I said, right, I got in here, this pile of paper, my classical electron is somewhere in here. I'm going to look and find where my classical electron is. I opened it up. There, I saw it, but by this time I was doing other equations with. So if you imagine, this was the aha time, but all the time I was beginning to do Schrodinger's equation in a practical, real earthy Aussie barbecue way. Let's do a bit of Schrodinger, like kicking the footy out the back, or playing. I was playing with the Schrodinger wave equation, and so that was beginning to make sense here. And there it was. We got a snap. It's sort of like a wildlife camera. You've got the camera. Now, let's look for the actual electron going into the trap. So I've set a trap for the electron at night to look for it. And what I saw wasn't a little mouse eating the bait. I saw this fuzz, this ghostly fuzz going through. And that ghostly fuzz will be the topic for my next podcast. But all these accidents came together. I had no money. It was really tough. I can't describe these things. I had to actually cycle, 800 kilometers between cities to get to places because I had no money to do it. And I slept out in the open underneath tents doing this whole crap. This is absolutely without a word of light true. It looks as though my people come back from... it's okay. Well, I'll have to finish up now. But it's there that I saw the actual... I'm afraid I can continue this for a short while longer. This is the part of the you being an accidental listener. You have to accidentally listen to other rubbish which is happening in my day. But yeah, it was there, and there was this feeling inside you that, it wasn't an evangelistic feeling like you've seen God or something like that, and you've got to tell the world, change the lifestyle. It was, right, the world's changed a bit for me personally. I didn't feel like I was ever going to be able to tell anybody, simply because I suppose I was a bit downtrodden. I had other things to annoy people at, and it was this finding that your aunt's a diamond smuggler and has been cheating on everyone, but is really important for other aspects of life, for giving you the money to go shopping or something really complex like that. It was muddled like that, but there was that realization that, I had been living, that there were these two cultures here. There was the childhood Disneyland U-Boot homey 1950s culture, which had been living on, and that there was this new thing happening. And the new thing was that I was not only one electron, I had three electrons that I was looking at, three whole big electrons. I couldn't find any of them, and they were all fuzzes sitting on top of each other. And what's more, that they were all fuzzes sitting on top of each other in between two nuclei. They were just in between the two nuclei, but these fuzzes pulling these two nuclei in. And it's the catch cry is that the molecule I looked at happened to be the highest temperature molecule ever and the smallest molecule ever. A molecule is two atoms together. And it was a molecule is the way to really do it, because a molecule is a series of atoms, and electrons are out and about the place. They're not in the private world of an atom. They're extrovert electrons, and they're out and about doing stuff. And so this is where you set your photo trap for. And so with the supercomputer, I had a look at it, and I had this feeling that I had a new relationship with maths and reality, and I was on by myself, and I really had this by myself feeling. I suppose I still do, but having this life-threatening thing and this time for rehab, you are really scratching the surface, and you eventually come out and say, look, I'll have to do explain quantum physics. So here's, in summary, three accidents. The accident that you're listening to it, the accident which led up to me doing all this software and podcasting to do it, and the accident of me becoming a quantum physicist probably 25 years ago. And it being such an intense experience that I wasn't, or haven't been really pushed to explain it to people, but sort of been more intensely aware that there's the other people explaining it haven't really captured it. So in my next episode, I'm going to capture to you what quantum physics is, and then the episode after that, I'll do the big scandal. You've been scammed. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.